And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton. Good afternoon. It's been more than a year since Gold Belt offered to invest in the Eagle Crest Gondola project. The Juneau Assembly approved a revenue-sharing agreement back in January, but the negotiations have continued. On Monday, City Manager Rory Watt introduced an updated agreement to the Assembly.
We thought we were there, but we weren't. Everybody has worked really hard on this, and we're just coming at it from, on the CBJ side, a government perspective, and the Gold Belt side, a business perspective.
Gold Belt is an Alaska Native corporation based in Juneau. The gondola will increase the potential for summer activities at the city-owned ski hill. The updated agreement still needs final approval from the Assembly. Some key terms remain the same. Gold Belt will invest $10 million in the project and in exchange get a share of summer revenue for 25 years. If Gold Belt doesn't get at least double its amount, the amount it invested in that time, the agreement would be extended. One change is the deadline for opening the gondola. The new agreement pushes it back a year to summer 2028. If it doesn't open by then, Gold Belt can back out. Another change is that Gold Belt will pay the city all at once this summer rather than in multiple payments.
That's really good for us. So we don't have to worry about things changing and maybe the way the world looks in a year to the Gold Belt board is different. So this is a really good thing for CBJ.
There's also a change in Gold Belt's favor. The city will have to pay Gold Belt additional interest if it backs out. Gold Belt President and CEO McHugh Pierre says the corporation is looking forward to the investment in Juneau tourism.
When we evaluate the future of tourism in the community, we know that there needs to be options to spread people out so the impacts are manageable. And we think that Eagle Crest, as an already developed area, is ripe for, sustainable additions.
Members of the public can comment on the proposed agreement at the next assembly meeting on May 8th. Indigenous people in Alaska are murdered and go missing at higher rates than almost anywhere in the country. Vivian Corthius sits on a commission created by Congress to address the problem. She says more than 300 Alaska Native people are on the missing and murdered registry.
To me, that's the same size of a village, a whole village. And it's shocking to know that there's that many people were missing.
The Not Invisible Commission met in Anchorage yesterday to hear testimony from victims and from advocates working to prevent violence. They identified a range of problems, including a lack of services for vulnerable people and too little law enforcement in rural Alaska. Systemic racism and trauma were recurring themes. Several advocates told the commission that it's hard to make federal programs work in rural Alaska, especially for small tribes. Dana Deal, the director of wellness and prevention at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, said federal grants aren't easily tailored to community needs.
Oftentimes the scope of our funding is very limited and narrow, but from an Alaska Native perspective, we see things more holistically, and you can't separate things like mental health, physical health, and spiritual health.
The commission invited family members of missing and murdered Indigenous people to testify during an afternoon session that was closed to the media. By October, the panel is supposed to produce recommendations on how the federal government can better prevent and respond to violence against Native American and Alaska Native people. The Anchorage hearing continued through today. And for the first time in recent history, Alaska legislators in both parties and the governor are talking about implementing a broad-based tax. New taxes aren't likely to pass this session, but Alaskans could start paying statewide sales or an income tax in the next few years. Many lawmakers say the looming deficit makes taxes necessary to keep paying for state services. Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan asked economists to explain the pros and cons of a sales tax versus an income tax.
Brett Watson, an economics professor at UAA's Institute of Social and Economic Research, says neither is great, economically speaking.
Income taxes at the margin reduce people's incentive to work. Sales taxes at the margin reduce people's incentive to spend. And generally speaking, we want people in the economy to work and we want people in the economy to spend money.
But Watson says taxes are necessary to pay for things that residents want, given the reality of a gaping $800 million budget hole. More state lawmakers, Republicans, and Democrats are starting to agree. Even Governor Mike Dunleavy, who's long been resistant to any new taxes, told lawmakers he's working on a sales tax proposal. Nolan Clauda, director of the UAA Center for Economic Development, says there are advantages to sales taxes.
A sales tax is, of course, a very efficient way of collecting tax revenue that doesn't tend to distort economic incentives too much.
In non-economic speak, sales taxes don't take a lot of complicated bureaucracy to implement, and they don't tend to change how much people buy. But they are regressive. That means poorer people are hit harder.
It does have the trade-off of being somewhat regressive. You know, lower-income earners generally are going to pay a higher share of their income in taxes than with a progressive income tax, for example.
That's because they still have to pay for essential products like groceries and gas. Jared Walczak, a researcher with the Washington, D.C.-based Tax Foundation, says there are ways to make a sales tax less regressive. A big one, taxing services like manicures and oil changes, and not just goods.
And we know that higher earners consume more in the services side. This is also going to apply to a lot of things like memberships, you know, the gym membership, all of the memberships that you might have.
Covering more services means the overall tax rate can remain low. An analysis by Walczak's right-leaning group found a 2.3% tax on most goods and services could earn the state up to $850 million, basically enough to fill the budget gap. That's essentially what a bill in the House from Representative Ben Carpenter, a Nikiski Republican, proposes. Walczak says a sales tax that includes nearly all services would make Alaska unique in the nation.
If the legislation currently under consideration were adopted, Alaska would have the most progressive sales tax in the country by an enormous margin.
Brett Watson, the UAA economist, says while any sales tax would still be more regressive than an income tax, economic analyses have repeatedly shown that cutting the permanent fund dividend hurts lower-income Alaskans most.
PFD cuts are by far the most regressive option.
He says if legislators really care about equity, preserving the PFD and implementing statewide taxes should be their first choice. Still, there are some costs that are harder to factor into economic analyses. People in rural off-the-road system communities already pay much more for staples like milk and eggs, says Representative Bryce Edgman, an independent from Dillingham. He says his constituents favor a progressive income tax bill, which in its current form would put a 2% tax on income more than $200,000 per year. He says the sales tax option would make it even less desirable to live in places like Dillingham.
I think it's going to be harder to attract and recruit teachers and other sort of itinerant workers that come and go over time with an additional sales tax burden.
Still, he's not ruling out the idea. He says he's glad that legislators and the governor have opened up discussions, as painful as new taxes might be. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Lex Trinan.
The Alaska Senate is set to propose a one-time boost to the amount of money allocated to each student in public schools around the state. Today, the Senate Finance Committee proposed a 15% increase to the current amount school districts receive from the state per student. Finance Committee co-chair Bert Stedman says the funding is an increase from a plan floated earlier in the week. Now what's on the table is a $680 increase. The funding amount is disappointing, though, to education advocates. They argue that the per-person funding formula has hardly budged for years, even with sharp inflation. Lon Garrison, director of the Association of Alaska School Boards, says he's thankful for any increase in funding, but he says districts realistically would need to double that to keep up with steep inflation in the past several years. Stedman told reporters he hopes to put the plan to the full Senate for a vote next week. From there, the House and Senate would have to agree on a budget plan, which faces challenges over the amount of the permanent fund dividend. The Senate is sticking with its plan to pay out a smaller dividend than usual, $1,300. That's much lower than the $2,700 dividend the House majority is proposing. The two chambers will have to find a compromise before the constitutional end of the session in about 20 days. Today was the start of a moderately heavy rain system around the region. It's currently 46 degrees and cloudy with some rain at Juneau International Airport. That is a little bit cooler than what's normal this time of year. And the aurora forecast is quite good this week. I don't know why I'm mentioning that, though, because the weather is not going to be very conducive to seeing any lights. Tonight, rain showers before midnight and then heavier rain after that, low around 41. Between a half and three quarters of an inch is possible overnight. Tomorrow, more rain. Could be heavy at times with a high near 45 and southeast wind 15 to 20 miles per hour. The rain will stick with us through the end of the week. Saturday, though, looking partly sunny with a high near 60. Sunset at 8:37 tonight. It's back up at 5:14 tomorrow morning.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Progressive Insurance. Progressive is looking for dedicated and forward-thinking